Rohini, the mother of Baladeva.
Jath,
also.
Mahabhaga,
the most fortunate mother of Baladeva. Greatly fortunate because of having the opportunity to raise Krishna and Balaram together. Nandagopa Abhinandita. Being honored by Maharaj Nanda and Mother Yashoda. Yacharat was busy wandering here and there. Divya, beautiful. Vasa, with a dress. Shruk, with a garland. Akanda Abharana, and with an ornament covering the neck. Bhushita, decorated. So the most fortunate Rohini, the mother of Baladeva, was honored by Nanda Maharaja and Yashoda, and thus she also dressed gorgeously and decorated herself with a necklace, a garland, and other ornaments. She was busy wandering here and there to receive the women who were guests at the festival. You can repeat. The most fortunate Rohini, the mother of Baladeva, was honored by Nanda Maharaja and Yashoda. And thus she also dressed gorgeously and decorated herself with a necklace, a garland and other ornaments. Dhanyavad. She was busy wandering here and there to receive the women who were guests at the festival. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay. Rohini, another wife of Vasudeva's, was also kept under the care of Nanda Maharaj with her son Baladeva. Because her husband was imprisoned by Kamsa, she was not very happy, but on the occasion of Krishna Janmashtami, Nandotsava, when Nanda Maharaj gave dresses and ornaments to others, he also gave gorgeous garments and ornaments to Rohini so that she could take part in the festival. Thus, she also was busy receiving the women who were guests. Because of her good fortune in being able to raise Krishna and Balaram together, she is described as Mahabhaga, greatly fortunate. So, Rohini cha Mahabhaga. Nanda Gopa Minandita Yacharad Divya Vasa Shrak Kanda Parana Bhushita. So, Om Maganat Simadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, this is an interesting verse because it reveals a lot about the Chintamani, Prakata Sadmasu, Gracias, Senora. So this reveals a lot about the culture then, the Vedic culture. So it's interesting when dealing with the Vedic culture, in many cases we have descriptions rather than prescriptions. There's a difference. And many times, devotees take, or people take, whatever, to justify their own ideas of life. They take the descriptions as prescriptions. There's a difference in the two words. Descriptions means you're describing what took place, you know, over 5,000 years ago. Prescriptions means what you should do now. Basically, prescriptions. So there's a lot of things that are described in the Vedic literatures that are not prescribed for us to do now. I mean, one of the things is sannyasis going naked. Be kind of cold here. you'd freeze a certain part of your body off. You know, anyway, so, or the wearing of deer skin. I mean, even you have, but those are injunctions, even injunctions or descriptive injunctions in the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. There's the deer skin injunction. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came across one of his followers that was wearing deer skin, he said, you know, couldn't be my follower, and my follower would never wear a deer skin like this. So he got him to change into a regular gumsho. In those days, sannyasis wore gumshoes. It's interesting. And so these are descriptions, and even prescriptions change according to time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, it's quite important to be expert in applying things according to time, place, and circumstance. Like, we don't dress as they dressed 5,000 years ago or 6,000 years ago. But certainly, Christians don't dress as Jesus Christ dressed. That would be quite interesting. Of course, there are some Christian groups where they do that. At least during the 60s, I remember there were Christian groups that dressed in robes and probably sheepskin or something like that. So, anyway, so I just want to preface this whole discussion by that particular point. So, here we find Rohini. Rohini is one of the wives of Vasudeva. Vasudeva had, I think, 16 wives, quite a few. And in the Vedic system, or during those times, one could have many wives if one was able to maintain those many wives with a proper house for each and every one of them, paying the mortgage to SunTrust Bank. You know, of course, it wasn't SunTrust Bank at that particular point. It was only, I guess, there were money lenders. You buy your house. They lend you the money. Anyway, in those days, houses were a lot cheaper, too. Except for kings. You know, kings had a lot of money, so they could construct a big house. So just like Krishna, he had 16,108 wives. Now, try to make that many houses. It would be quite difficult. 16,108. Of course, he's G-O-D. We don't want to use that word. He's the Supreme Person. And he was able to arrange for all those houses without much endeavor. It's not that Krishna had to have 16,000 jobs or work day duty, night duty. Nowadays, of course, to pay for one house, you have to work like an ass. And, you know, one house, one wife. Actually, it's described in Kali Yuga, a man is considered to be a great hero if he can maintain one wife. So what to speak of 16,000, what to speak of two, what to speak of three. So, anyway, so Krishna, being the Supreme Person, was able to divide himself up and arrange for palaces for each and every one of his wives, and also be doing something different in each and every palace, with each and every wife, and with all of his different children. There were 10 children from each wife. And that's a lot, you know, playing with your children every day, because he's the Supreme Person. So for those who are not Supreme Persons, usually, like, I guess 16 was usually the limit. Of course, you have one gentleman with 10 million wives, Chitraketu, which we described in a previous Sunday feast class. And of course, he lived a lot longer, too. You know, you live longer, you're richer, you have a big kingdom. I mean, for example, if someone is a billionaire, even in America, they could afford to support quite a few wives, right? Anyway. So, I don't know if I'm going to get into polygamy today. So that was bona fide. And the reason, one of the reasons that a man would marry many women in those days was that the women were protected by the men. And one could say, well, what about the poor man who couldn't find a wife because some lucky guy, quote, lucky guy. you know, from my perspective, it's not lucky. But anyway, some lucky guy had 16 wives. Well, it's not that these poor men were thinking, oh my God, that king, he took all the ladies, you know, there's no... And not only 16 wives, I mean, there's another factor that you should be aware of, that each and every wife had maidservants. So maybe 50 maidservants or something like that. Oh my God. So you have a pretty big brahmacharini ashram. Actually, in Valmiki's Ramayana, it's translated in Old English, where the women were kept, you know, the wives of the king, particularly talks about Ravana there. They're called a gymnasium, not gymnasium, like we have now, but it's G-Y-N. Like, you know, the word gynecology, study of women. Gynecology, you've heard that word before? That means a doctor who studies ladies. You know, gynecologist is someone who studies. And anyway, people go to gynecology, ladies go to gynecologists, men don't, hopefully. So it was called gymnasium, where all the ladies were kept. So getting back to the point, so what about the poor guy who couldn't find a wife because someone else took them all away? Well, from my perspective, he wasn't so poor. But anyway, so another point is that in those days, there were a lot of Brahmins and people who decided not to get married. And they engaged in spiritual life completely. I mean, not that someone who's married can engage in spiritual life. Someone who has many wives can engage in spiritual life. That's okay. But there was more impetus on renunciation. Actually, in Kali Yuga, there is that statement. And, you know, anyway, going back a little bit. So when we talk about renunciation, we're not only talking about devotees. We're talking about, you know, impersonalists. There's all sorts of grades of people who renounce. You know, yogis who went to the mountains, went to a sacred place, sat down on deerskin. That was all right. So there are a lot of men out there like that. So you get rid of a lot of eligible men, and they don't want to get a job, basically. Or their job is self-realization. You get rid of a lot of eligible men, so that sort of balances things, you know. So, you know, if anyone was looking for a wife, there's always someone for them to marry. So that's important. And then the kings accepted many wives, because that's how they protected the ladies. It's not that they took many wives because they were lusty as dogs. That wasn't the motivation. It was protection. Just like when Krishna came across 16,100 of his wives, they had been kidnapped by this Bhomasura, who happened to be Krishna's son. But he had some bad association. I guess he went to the wrong university and hung out with the wrong people. He goes to, actually, whoever you associate with, that's how you become. Like Prabhupada will often say, you associate with drunkards, you become a drunkard. If you go to the stock market, I mean, just like one time I was traveling and I read the Wall Street Journal. Heard of the Wall Street Journal? It deals, I mean, it does tell us the basic news, but it also deals primarily with the stock market. And I was just looking at, you know, I just came back from the trip. So I just looked at one stock. It was a Boeing. And because Boeing just had, you know, one of their planes, the 737 MAX, which I just flew in. Anyway, so there was an accident, and so two accidents actually. The stock has gone down. So I was reading this, and I started to get nervous. And I haven't invested any money in the stock market either. It's not that, you know, some as a sannyasi, I'm looking at the ticker tape every day and watching the stocks go up and down. But just by reading it, I said, oh my God, Boeing's going down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is just like decreasing. So just by that association, you get into the same consciousness by reading something, even reading something. So that's why association is perhaps the most important factor in spiritual life. And we find many injunctions about that, you know, sadhu-sangha, sarva-sishtra-koi, lava-matra, sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddhi-hoi, that one can attain all perfection by good association because it rubs off. I mean, why does it rub off? It's not just like a mental thing, but there's subtle energy. There's actually subtle energy pervading the universe and the modes of nature and the energy of consciousness that pervades God's creation. And it influences matter and influences other entities. Just like the experiment, famous experiment with the rice. Actually, there's one with water that's even more famous, where someone exhibited different emotional states before water crystals, which are in ice, and it affected the state of the crystals, and also affected, there's another one with rice, where it affected how quickly or slowly the rice actually putrefied. You know, someone had good consciousness, the rice basically almost didn't putrefy after 2 weeks. Someone had bad consciousness, the rice was putrefied after 2 days. So matter is affected by consciousness. And that's one reason. I mean, just a little scientific information for you right now, for those of you who are scientists. That's one reason the scientists, even those who specialize in quantum mechanics, can't understand why things are happening when you, what Einstein find a spooky action at a distance. Some of you may have heard about this before. Anyway, just to impress you. Where two particles are entangled. You looked that up last night?
No.
No. So you should look these things up. What is the value of your education? So, where two particles are entangled and you can separate them and then they mimic each other even if they're separated by thousands of miles. And it's, scientists even don't understand how it happens. I understand. It's all consciousness. There's living entities everywhere.
What's the name of this principle?
Well, the principle is spooky action at a distance. And it Einstein talked about. That's Einstein's comment on it, because he didn't actually believe in it, but it's proven to be true. Because it, anyway, it goes against some of his, Einstein's beliefs. So, anyway, apart from that, there's consciousness everywhere, and it affects matter. For example, another scientific principle is when you go to measure something on the nanoscale, you know, subatomic scale, it actually affects it. You understand the spin of an electron, for example, it actually affects the spin of the electron, just the conscious measurement of it. So consciousness is the pervading factor. So by association, dull matter changes. So what to speak of someone else's consciousness changing. So getting back to the story. So Krishna's son, Bhoma, he had bad association and his consciousness changed. Actually, there's another story about that in the Ramayana. And not the Ramayana, actually in the Bhagavatam. About Dvidvita Gorilla. Dvidvita Gorilla was a good guy. A good gorilla, sorry. Sounds like a child's story. A good gorilla who helped Lord Ram, and by bad association, he became a bad gorilla and attacked Balaram. And also, he did commit offenses also against Lakshman. That's another story. Of course, committing offenses can cause you to take bad association or consciousness. So many things. Like, when we talk about Krishna consciousness, it's a science of consciousness. You understand? The consciousness is the most important thing, not the external activity, but the consciousness that you have while you are performing some external activity. That's the most important factor. Because even if you don't do any external activity, if you have the right consciousness in, let's say, that Brahman who is meditating on offering to Krishna, and he wasn't doing any external ceremony, but he had pure consciousness and he was able to perceive the reality, the spiritual reality internally, then he was performing a pure devotional service. This Bhoma, he had really bad consciousness, and he kidnapped all these girls, 16,100 girls. And they were princesses. And they approached Krishna because no one else would marry them because they had lived for some time with a demon. Of course, they hadn't had any like physical relationship with him. But they had lived with him. And so their purity was actually questionable. Not in my mind, but you know, in the mind of society. So because of that, they weren't going to be able to find any husbands, and they were really bereft. And they approached Krishna and said, "Krishna, we're not going to be able to find any other husbands, so you don't have any choices." And so Krishna said, "Okay. I had already married some girls before that, so it wasn't a problem." In the beginning, he actually wanted to be brahmachari. There's that story that Krishna was thinking, "I want to be a brahmachari. I don't want to get married and get entangled in this world." Because even when he was in Vrindavan, he didn't get entangled. Anyway, that's another story. He didn't get entangled, so... But then he got that letter from Rukmini, who was betrothed, or attempted to betroth, to Shishupal. And then he thought, "Well, I'd capture her, rescue her, so I'm not a brahmachari, so I might as well be householder and have a lot of houses." So Krishna took all those girls and he got married to them and he was able to divide himself up. Okay, so that's polygamy. So fast forward to today's world. And at one point, Prabhupada did indicate there should be polygamy, you know, to protect the girls. But anyway, it's really something that is not recommended. Unless one is a king or something like that. And it's not part of our Krishna conscious heritage. It's part of the heritage, but it's not really something that's done. But it's preferable to divorce and remarriage. Because divorce and remarriage is, what is it? It's serial polygamy. You understand? Serial polygamy without the responsibility. Like Henry VIII, he was engaged in that. Of course, in order to engage in serial polygamy, he had to kill some of his wives. And otherwise, in order to divorce, he had to arrange for his own church. That's nice, you know. Change the philosophy. Change the philosophy, you know, to suit yourself. You know, let's form, let's make our own Hare Krishna movement, so we can do something that we wouldn't ordinarily do. You know, let's have our marijuana smoking Hare Krishna movement. It's a branch, you know, one of the authorized branches of the Hare Krishna movement. Not really, this is just a joke. So anyway, so this is one point here, the polygamy. But I think a more important point, before time runs out, is Rohini's mood in relationship to her husband. Because she was separated from her husband, it's described here, and her husband was imprisoned by Kamsa, she was not very happy. Which means, in general, when she was separated from her husband, she didn't dress herself up. She dressed, but not with gorgeous garments and ornaments that are being described here. Because the whole purpose of her dressing nicely, or in those days, of a wife dressing nicely, was not just to show off, you know, her body, or to show off in front of the other women, I'm better than you. For example, there's one ceremony they have in Fiji. Fiji is primarily people from India, from Bihar, and it's called the Priti Bhog. I don't know, do you know about that, Aditya? You've heard of that before? It's the day before the marriage, where all the ladies dress up in their latest ornaments. And what they do, the men really don't take part in it. They just, it's like a fashion show in which they show off their latest dress to each other. There's a whole story about that. One time I was at someone's house for dinner, and it was right before the Priti Bhog that night, the Priti Bhog that night, and I didn't see any of the ladies. You know, usually they're serving you prasadam or something like that. I said, where'd they go? They said, and one of the men said, they're hiding out from you. I said, why? He said, they're in the kitchen. So I went into the kitchen, and they were all dressed like Radharani on the altar. You know, like little deities, or big deities, sorry. And I just said, oh my God, what is this? You know, not that I was attracted, it's just like, huh? They dress better than the deities. And they described a Priti Bhog. And then I said, okay. And then later that night, I walked by it because it was held right next to my ashram. There's a hall right next to where I stay in Suva. And I said, oh my God. So in the Vedic system, in other words, they were all showing off their latest outfits to each other, you know, trying to outdo everyone else. Whatever. Isn't that nice, that outfit? So in the Vedic system, the purpose of the lady addressing was to please the husband, and to be joyful if she's with the husband, and also to please the husband. You may say, why dress up to please the husband? Because everybody in the Vedic system, Veda means knowledge, and I'm not talking about the details right now. Everybody in the Vedic system who was actually not, let's say, of a lower caliber or lower mode of nature, was living their life for devotion to each other and to the Supreme Person. See, I left out the G word. To the Supreme Person. They were. In other words, that was the purpose of everything. So the wife was thinking of love, out of love for the husband. Why would she dress nicely for the husband? So the husband would just like think that she was like the greatest, whatever, you know, most attractive girl. No, it's pleasing to, let's say if someone's married, pleasing to the man's mind. If the wife is dressed nicely when he comes home from the forest, if he happens to be a king. You know, you come home from the forest and there's your wife in curlers. You better go back to the forest. and there's no prasadam there. Say, dear, I'm home. And, you know, I'm not going to describe everything. you need some, you know, so that's a loving reciprocation. Because the wife had love for the husband, and the husband had love for the wife. So it's not because the husband loved the wife that he put on jewelry. Sometimes the men would wear jewelry in those days. But he would bring her presents, like saris or jewelry or a nice prasadam. You know, whatever. So it was all loving exchange. You understand the point I'm making? That's the essence. That's Vedic. It wasn't that people were doing things because they had to, generally. Even though there were, you know, rules, you need rules and regulations in society, or else society becomes like, it's like anarchy, falls apart. So, and just like Nanda Maharaj here, he's taking care of Vasudeva's wife. Why is he doing that? First of all, he's the half-brother of Vasudeva. And, you know, they both had the same father, different mother. Okay. So, and, but he's doing it because, you know, he loves his brother. Or Lakshman. Taking care of Ram and Sita. Why was he doing that? Was he doing that just because there was a rule in society, you have to take care of your older brother or else you go to hell? You know, generally people do things because of, you know, threats or rewards, punishments, you understand, rewards or punishments. And many times the Vedic society is presented to people like a bunch of rules. You follow this rule, follow that rule. No. Prabhupada said you should not present Krishna consciousness as a bunch of rules. I mean, for example, I follow some rules, but not because they are rules or because I'm afraid of the Yamadutas. You know, we have the 4A live principles. No meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling, except for the stock market. So we have the 4 regulative principles. So I follow them because I have some devotion for Prabhupada. I'm not going to be just like humble. I have some devotion for Prabhupada and for Krishna, and I want to please them. Not because I'm afraid of anything. You know, many people present the Vedic culture like as a fear-based culture. Or, you know, reward, like reward and train up animals. It's not like that. These devotees, Dada Maharaj, Yashodamayi, and then of course Rohini here, and they're all doing things because out of love. So it's a very much bhakti-based culture. So that's the real point. If we really want Vedic culture nowadays, it's not so much the details. It's the devotion. We should be doing things for devotion. And sometimes these details will be different than the descriptions. And even the prescriptions that were there 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. But things should be done from the heart. That's the essence of what's being described here. And therefore Rohini didn't dress herself nicely most of the time. Even though there were other ladies around to show off, she didn't dress herself nicely. But now she's doing it because she's joyful about Krishna. Like that. So there's joy. It's an exhibition of joy, exhibition of devotion. And this is how we want to frame our society. Tadati pratigranati guhyam akyati prichati bhute bhujyate chaiva. As Srila Rupa Goswami describes in the Upadeshamrita, that's how our society grows, through devotional exchanges, giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing the mind and confidence, having confidential relationships, and dealing with each other and with Krishna, the Supreme Person, with devotion. So, okay. Any quick questions? Yes?
Couldn't it be argued by someone that our external activities are a reflection of our consciousness?
Yes, because if the person who we're devoted to wants, you know, is pleased by that. Let's see, is pleased by that. For reason. Not just that, you know, I'm pleased because it's a rule. I mean, I was just reading the biography on my way back about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was performing all these austerities, and he was stopped doing them by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who stated, this is not the right thing. Even though those austerities, they were chaturmasa austerities, he was getting very sick just by eating once a day just rice with a little ghee on it, like a duck, you know, going down once. Anyway, I don't have a lot of time to describe it. And he was stopped. Because it's not the rules, it's whether the person who we're trying to please, because we're always trying to please persons, desires that for a specific purpose. So everything has to be based on a teleological understanding. Teleological means, teleos means purpose. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.